Before we start, we did this thing last time. What's your favorite hot dog topping since you've been to
What?
Chicago?
We did that last time?
This is the Space Dojo Show, a weekly podcast about all things JavaScript. You can find out more information at show.spacedojo.com. Enjoy the show. DigitalOcean is the best place to get your Meteor application off the ground quickly and the easiest to scale when you find success. I host Crater.io there, so I understand DigitalOcean. Start with a pre-configured one-click launch, such as Node.js, to get it up and running in 55 seconds, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSD in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. DigitalOcean is the fastest growing cloud infrastructure provider because it's built for developers and laser focused on its mission to create simple and elegant solutions for developers and teams. Use the promo code CRATER10 on the billing page when you sign up for $10 to get started.
Welcome to the Space Dojo Show. I'm your host, Josh Owens, along with my co-host,
Ben Strahan. Hello, everybody.
What's up, Ben?
What's up?
So I think we've got an awesome show lined up today. I'm actually pretty excited about it. We have Eric.
I'm stoked.
Eric Kriske and Dave Lutke with us. They've created feathers.js. Is that right?
So, I see the heads nodding.
Yeah, there's heads nodding.
Sorry,
I'm not watching the video.
Yeah. We created Feathers.
Tell us what Feathers is.
So it's a minimal, we'll call it service-oriented JS framework. So it's geared for Node.js, the browser, and React Native. And it's just a really thin wrapper over top of Express, actually, and a couple of the WebSocket libraries like Socket.io and Primus, but gives you a bit more structure to your application. And we try and put it, the whole point of it was to really make it easy to transition from kind of a monolithic, you know, application where you've got all your services, or in MVC land, like all your controllers and models all in one app, and split them out into multiple services when you need to scale it out. So yeah, that's the high level version of Feathers, I guess.
How long has Feathers been around, actually? I only heard of it maybe with the Hacker News post that went up the other day. Like I'd heard mention of it, but it didn't really like get my radar until the 2.0 was mentioned.
The beginning was actually a Java app that I wrote for my thesis in 2010. There was even a PHP version that was about as long-lived as my interest in PHP, because then Node.js came around. So you could say 6 years, but I think the real birth date was more version 0.4. Eric, when did we release that one? 2 years ago?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably around 2 years ago, really. Like, I don't even know. I'd have to go back and look. Like, even the 1.0, we probably didn't release until 2 years or year ago-ish.
So basically the core has been pretty stable and been around for a little bit, but I think the 2.0, we added some pretty cool things that we're really happy with. That makes it a little more than just like API framework for Express, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about some of the big changes in 2.0.
Okay, so I'll put on the marketing hat.
Ah.
With 1.0, it's funny, we never had any luck. I think they boycott Canadians and Hacker News, actually. So we were really surprised that it made it up to the homepage, because it took a couple of days and we were like, oh, okay, another flop. Guess that's not going to, whatever. I think with 2.0 is really more about branding and around like kind of solidifying more the marketing message around it, really. Like, With Feathers, the core actually didn't really change. We had a couple breaking changes. Like, I noticed you guys mentioned on the podcast last week that we were following or trying very hard to follow proper subverse. So with core, like, there were a couple breaking changes that we found, and we're going to be doing a V3 coming up with some breaking changes that we do know about. Those will probably come a little later this year, like later in the year. But they're really small. I mean, just because core itself is actually really small. Now, what we really tried to do with the 2.0 release is in December, we kind of decided, well, we're going to take this either from just kind of being a side project that we've been using, you know, for consulting work or for our own personal projects. And we're either going to go for it and actually make it a proper, you know, something people want to consume, or we just keep it the way that it is. Right. And in December, we decided to obviously go a bit more full bore on it. And a bulk of the work was just around, you know, documentation. We did some of the plugins, like probably the big one for this release was authentication, but really we're rolling out stuff that we found and everybody finds that they need in almost every application. Right. So just making it easy, but to build out apps really quickly, but also entirely optional. I think that was the big key thing for us, is keeping stuff as plugins or totally pluggable.
I think the universal thing was pretty cool too. And that just happened by accident. Somebody was like, hey, can we load this in the client? And we were like, yes. And then we had this version that you can use on the client just as well as on the server. And you use it transparently pretty much now. And I think that's a really fun feature to use.
This used to be called the Meteor Club podcast, and we renamed it. So we've got like a heavy background of listeners from Meteor. You know, I think for me, like, the universal piece, I find the place I use it the most is with the data, kind of the data modeling, you know, on the front end and the back end, and being able to have that kind of common API that's shared in both spots. Is that kind of what you guys are seeing as well now that you've released the universal support, or how are people kind of using that feature?
I mean, that's exactly it. Like Dave said, it was kind of by accident. I think some guy, I only know his first name, Mikey, on GitHub, he just said, hey, you know, it'd be cool as if you could actually use this on the client. Because initially we were just looking at it as just a server-side implementation, and we hadn't, you could still talk to it using the REST library or Socket.io or Primus or whatever on the client, but we didn't bundle it all up for you. And then, Dave, one night was like, I think I actually can do that, so let's just try hacking it out. And he did it in the night. And then we refined it from there. And that's where we're seeing, it was actually a really powerful accident, because that kind of then put us into the same space as a bit more like Meteor, I think, but even some of the other client-side frameworks. I mean, we want to stay view engine agnostic, because that's kind of what people have their own personal choice for. And we have some stuff coming down the pipe that will make managing data a little bit easier, but that's, yeah, primarily what people are using it for. And what we recommend is, you know, use Feathers for your back-end stuff and, you know, your front-end kind of data management or application state, but you get to pick your own view engine. And a nice other accident that kind of came along with that is Feathers actually doesn't have, like on the client side, doesn't have to talk to a Feathers backend. If you're implementing Socket.io, like in some cases it kind of does, but if you're doing basic REST stuff, like we give you that service and hooks kind of that pluggability on the front end, and you could be talking to an existing RESTful API on the back end that isn't the Feathers app.
I think one of the big things that attracts me to Feathers is the flexibility that you have with it compared to something other than like Meteor that we come from. One of the big things is the flexibility with like databases that you guys can pick. Even like touching like local storage, I saw that your SQL support is like pretty amazing. Can you guys talk a little bit on that and like the challenges of it or the precedents put on that? Yeah, I'm interested.
So it's interesting because we did have a couple of database adapters, but they were just like implementing that basic interface, and that was it. And I think with that version, actually, we started making it more like having a shared test suite that makes sure that you can do the same kind of querying over those different adapters. And then realized that it was actually not that hard with having that in place to add like different ORMs and different databases, because there are a lot of them. And they're like the ones that we chose as ORMs and specific database implementation. But it actually made it pretty easy because most ORMs support all of the stuff. So all we had to do was map our query syntax that we had from before to what the ORMs were doing. So that was actually not as much of a challenge. Right now, I think we're learning a little bit more about the nitty-gritty details, because some stuff, to be honest, like SQLize, we made the test pass against our adapters, right? But there's a little more to it when people build like a big app, which are mostly SQLized questions, but they come up if somebody uses it combined with that, right? So Eric is working on making many-to-many relationship examples and things like that. And we probably want to like make the shared test suite also a little more like over, making it cover more than the querying syntax and stuff that we described there. The challenge for that totally is that, well, you have to change it for like 6 or 7 different libraries. And each one is a little bit different. It's been good so far because I don't think none of the adapters is more than 130 lines of code. So it's really like the ORMs and the database drivers are doing most of the work for us, which is really nice.
Which, I mean, because you're coming from Node land, you have a lot of those ORMs already available to you. And I think a number of people, like, you guys are using Express, you're using, you know, Node and NPM and all that kind of stuff. And you also, like, I thought it was interesting, too, like, diving into the JSON web tokens. It seems like that's more of a standard than, say, something like authentication over DDP or something like that. So that's really interesting. Like, can you talk about like what JSON web tokens are and how they work maybe?
Yeah, sure. I'll kind of take that and kind of follow up a bit on Dave's stuff too, that unlike the client being an accidental decision, the database stuff and wrapping Express was a very intentional decision, because I think for us, like, because we're a small group and because we're not, you know, we don't have any official backing other than the consulting work that we do. It's good and bad, right? Like, I mean, we've got time constraints and we also have, you know, financial constraints. So with that, we have to make pretty smart decisions, and that means that we leverage as much as we can from the community. Like Dave was saying, we did write, it's still around, but the first database adapter we wrote was an in-memory one. And then the second one was a MongoDB one. And we actually started going down the route of MySQL and Postgres. And in reality, we had those built. We just didn't publish them because we took a step back and went, this is absolutely insane. Like, you know, there's all these great ORMs. We should just see if we can wrap those and translate them. Because if we try and write, you know, otherwise you're going to write 15 to 20 different database adapters and try and maintain them all. It's crazy. Like Dave was saying, a challenge there is it still kind of feels like we're maintaining some of those, because we do get questions that come up with, or, you know, around SQLize or around Waterline. But I think the benefits outweigh the drawbacks there. Regarding the choice to go with JWT, I mean, we really gleaned a lot from Auth0 and what they're doing. So Auth0 is like a SaaS platform that manages authentication for you. And they've built some really, really awesome stuff, including, you know, they're really pushing JSON Web Token. And the intentional choice behind that is we wanted to make it really easy for you to scale your app, like I was saying, from day one. And with JWT, it's stateless. So you can, as long as you're using the same secret on the servers that you need to talk to, you don't have to worry about sticky sessions and stuff like that. And I know that that's a challenge that Meteor currently has is... And you probably know more about that than I do, Josh, actually, but that they rely on sessions, I think, right now still in order to synchronize state.
Yeah, the server with Meteor, the server kind of keeps track of the state that it's sent. And so they like to use sticky sessions to make sure you're not re-asking and forcing a new server to grab all that same data it's already kind of tracking in memory. So that's why they use sticky sessions, which isn't like super hard. I think Nginx is a one-liner. You use like IP hash or something like that.
I know, it's funny. It seems to come up. We've seen it come up a few times in the Slack group that people are like, oh my God, this is, you know, this is so nice to not have sticky sessions. I'm like, is it that? I've never had a real problem with that. Like Heroku does it well. Yeah. Nginx has, like you're saying, a one-liner where you can load balance it. It's not really that much of a problem in my opinion.
So Meteor is like super close to being able to do kind of a service-oriented architecture. But the problem is there's no way to share any kind of like authentication state between basically multiple Meteor applications. And so someone's created something that's like, you know, an API key system that can work. But there's no way to like say I've got these apps on this same root domain that can like just use this JSON web token. So it would be nice to use something maybe a little more standard in Meteor land, but who knows?
And, you know, I guess full disclosure, like I've done some stuff with Meteor, but I'm definitely would not consider myself a Meteor expert by any means. Yeah, JSON web token, and that was part of the initial design, I think, when they did it. And this is only from me reading through the spec and reading through the awesome stuff on Auth0's blog. But you can encode whatever in the token, so you can JSON encode stuff. And so the nice thing for us is that it makes it pretty easy that if you want to do similar stuff like group apps or channel things, or only you can actually save auth state inside the token. And when it gets decoded on the server, you can actually check some of the values that are stored inside of that token in order to be a certain way.
That's very cool. Yeah. Do you find any challenges with scaling with the real-time aspect?
Or maybe a better question is like, what's the biggest app you know of out there?
Yeah, but that's like, I don't like that those types of questions, because it's like, Twitter was built with what? Oh, we must use that. That must be the cool thing. What was Facebook built with? Oh, we should use that. I know I'm using those two on purpose, so that it's like, I'm like down.
It's a pretty fair question, though. I mean, like, I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to deny that Feathers is pretty fresh, right? But we think that everybody, you know, everybody started from somewhere. We've had some people kind of come out of the woodwork. I don't even know really what they're scaling, what type of volume they're dealing with, but it's been kind of weird because really, like I was saying, prior to 2.0, you know, I think we had 800 stars on GitHub or something. And so you're like, well, okay, some people have obviously seen this, but you don't know if people are actually using it, you know? And we weren't really promoting it that hard because we weren't sure if we were going to, you know, frankly, if we were a really great solution, at least from my perspective. I think Dave was a lot more bought into it than I was because he did his thesis on it. But for me, even though we had been using it for a year and a half, over the last year and a half, we've been kind of constantly looking at the other frameworks out there and trying to figure out, are we just reinventing the wheel? Like, is it yet another framework? Because we're pretty sensitive to that. I mean, like, there's so much awesome stuff that comes out of that, but it's also a lot of people talk about the JavaScript fatigue, right? And framework fatigue. And I think we've been really, really careful about making sure that we are actually offering something unique and different and approaching it in a different way, because otherwise you should just go use a different framework. And I think from the scaling story, like coming back to the original question, we're still kind of finding people that are doing it. Like, I actually had a call with a company today that is looking to switch over to Feathers. They've done stuff previously with Feathers 1. This is a new company and they're looking to switch over because their node backend is on Express and is kind of not that great, but they recently were featured in the Apple App Store and had 1.2 million downloads in the last like 21 days. The fact that we're a really thin wrapper over top of Express, and the fact that Core has been really stable for the last, you know, 2 years or year and a half, I think definitely shouldn't shy people away from trying it out and worrying about scaling and going forward. Like, that has been our goal from day one, is being able to scale. So we've been really thinking about the architecture and we're continuing to do that, making it easy to scale. And we'll have some guides and stuff coming out over the next little bit that kind of show you how you can break up your app and take it to scaling out on Docker and scaling out on DigitalOcean or AWS. So mm-hmm.
The big thing that in the Meteor world, we've been like kind of measuring how many concurrent users you can connect to like a server. Is that like a relevant measure for Feathers?
I think a lot of it is kind of like Eric said, right? Because it's such a thin wrapper. Everything that applies to Express and Socket.io also applies to Feathers. So it's really, I mean, there is some Feather specific things, right? That you can take a service and just move it to another system and then connect to it, and you don't, it's really easy to do. But when it comes to scaling and load, everything that applies to Socket.io and Express applies to Feathers too. And my rule of thumb was, I think, 10,000 connections per server, but I've only done, like, that's only my personal experience. so simultaneous socket connections to servers, which is crazy because Node can handle a lot. I'd love to see like some more performance benchmarks, but I think we're also thinking that if, you know, if the modules are super lean and the architecture is small, it's much easier to figure out where the bottleneck is, right? You don't have to go through this entire giant system to figure out where your problems are because it's so decoupled and they're all small modules. I think it's pretty easy to find out where the bottlenecks are. So
yeah,
trying to focus on that and not saying we have the solution to scaling, but we're hoping that the architecture that the whole system has helps with making it easier.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing is too with the approach of using Express and the other options, the choices that you've made, like supporting the different ORMs that you do, like it feels like you could probably find a lot of these answers on Stack Overflow or elsewhere, right? Like you can go to reddit.com/r/node and probably find a post that's close to what you're thinking about. Like just because you're using feathers as the glue doesn't mean that you're kind of stuck off in no man's land. Like no one knows how to fix your problem or hasn't encountered it before, I guess.
Yeah, 100%.
We even set that for authentication initially, but it turned out that actual socket and HTTP JWT authentication is actually something that hasn't been done that often, so that was why we decided to, like, Eric did a lot of work in making sure that it works.
Very cool. Let's talk about authentication for a minute. So I went through the tutorial really quick. Yeoman kind of makes authentication out of the box, and I didn't dive too much into it, and I was like, man, this is perfect. I can ask these guys to, like, dive in for me then. So tell us about authentication with Express. Not Express, sorry, with feathers.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's a good little Freudian slip, actually. It's really not, we're not doing that much. I think the only thing that's really kind of a little bit different, I had gone and initially we had gone and done some stuff. We did a Feathers Passport plugin that we recently deprecated, and that's what we were using for 1.x because all the authentication stuff is built on top of Passport. Again, like trying not to reinvent the wheel. The only thing that we've written ourselves really is just some service wrappers to make it a little bit more feathersy over top of it. I guess the socket, kind of the wrapper for some of the socket events. And then the last thing is the actual token implementation. Then we're just using JSON Web Token, the Node JSON Web Token module underneath. The one thing that we are doing a little bit different, it's kind of interesting, all the implementations out there of Socket.io authentication require you to pass stuff via, they kind of expose stuff over the query string, which I thought was kind of like, I don't know, that's a pretty big no-no. Like you don't want to, you could potentially have a malicious proxy in between, right? That you don't want to expose your auth token. So we've been pretty careful of that as well. And basically what we do is we wrap it all in the header for your request. And then once your socket is authenticated, then it stays authenticated until it gets disconnected on either end. And so if your initial request is happening over HTTPS, which it should be, then it's not really that easy for an attacker to get access to your auth token.
If I wanted to add, like, you know, Twitter social login, would I add the Passport module for that to get that working? Is that how that would work with Feathers?
Yeah, that's exactly how you do it. It's kind of funny though, Twitter. So we only support OAuth 2 and not OAuth 1. And Twitter is probably the only big one out there that doesn't support OAuth 2 authentication. We're not sure when we want to plan it because the thing with OAuth 1 is it requires sessions in order to do the actual authentication. And so we intentionally left that off of this first release just to kind of see how some of the stuff plays out. Frankly, I'd rather focus a bit more on the scaling aspect of Feathers first and then come back to that to see, you know, can we still do all the stuff we want to do now that we're bringing in session-based authentication. I've actually been thinking a lot about it the last couple of days too, because Twitter, obviously, like I want to use Twitter, so do other people. It sucks that they don't have OAuth 2. I'm really hoping that maybe they'd roll it out, but if realistically, we probably would end up moving a bit quicker the more I've been thinking about it the last couple of days, it's probably actually not too bad, because in the end, the only thing you're using this session for is the initial authentication call, and then we just exchange it for a JWT. So whenever you authenticate with Feathers, whether you use OAuth2 or OAuth1 or local auth or even like some sort of passwordless stuff that we're working on right now, in the end, what we just exchange that once you've authenticated, we exchange that for a JWT, and then you get it back. You get the JWT back, and then you use that for your subsequent requests after that. So I don't think it'll be too bad, but definitely, no Twitter support right now. No OAuth1 support, but there are a lot of providers that offer OAuth2. So,
did you specifically ask that, Josh?
No, I didn't.
Twitter's like the one. It's like perfect.
Yeah. That was totally like we lucked into that answer. Awesome. But Auth0 can kind of handle that for you, right? Is that true? Like, I haven't used Auth0, but they're kind of like an intermediary for other OAuth services, and then you kind of get their token back from them. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we modeled Auth very much after Auth0. Like, I was looking at their docs. I think they hired Jared Hansen, who was the creator of Passport. They created or are one of the major backers of the JSON Web Token spec. They built their business around it, and they're really sharp team. I haven't actually had a chance to talk with any of them, but looking at their stuff, their modules, and their documentation, we really looked heavily at how they're doing it. So I guess once we land kind of Twitter support and passwordless auth, from a high level perspective, we offer a lot of what Auth0 does for you, but they do some really awesome stuff on top of that. Like, they also do audit logging. You have the ability to revoke tokens, which we don't have support yet for. You can do refresh tokens. Like, they built a lot of stuff on top, and it's pretty rock solid. I think the big thing for us is we'll probably have a guide coming out soon that shows how to do Auth0, but we didn't want to necessarily force developers that if they wanted to use authentication that they have to kind of go either Passport and still do it all yourself, or go the Auth0 route and maybe end up in a paid situation.
The thing that I was looking at is that Passport has like an Auth0 component that you could add. So you could really, like, if you're desperate, you could get Twitter authentication that way currently, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Good. One other question that I saw that was coming up in Hacker News posts was about how real time the actual like data communication is. Could you maybe talk around that a little bit? Because I think, you know, for me coming from Meteor Land, I'm aware of like doing op-log tailing and getting, you know, however fast the server can process the op-log, you know, we're getting that pushed out to the client, they're getting that real time, which I will say, in all reality, I'm not sure how much up to the second real timeness I need in a web app. Like, I want some version of it, but at the same time, like, I don't need it for everything all the time either, which is kind of where Meteor leaves you. You know, what does that look like? Like, what's the delay time? How does that function? That kind of thing.
It's pretty interesting because Hacker News even like was discussing about the term real time, what it means in other computer science fields and what it means in web development, right? So I think Feathers and Socket.io and Meteor are doing the same thing that we as web developers consider real time, right? It pushes information to your client without the client having to pull for it. So I think that we can all agree on that definition of real time, because even people didn't agree on that. So like, I don't know, you have to have the terms to talk about, right? So real time for Feathers means that, and that's probably pretty important, that it's on the service level. So it happens at the API level, or, you know, you can use the API internally too. You don't have to go through the API, but it happens at that service level. So basically any service, like let's say you build a service that talks to another REST API or to something that claims to be a REST API and isn't, you still get all those events that created, updated, et cetera. So that's why it's possible for us to support so many different databases, right? One thing that we've been talking about a little bit is to, because there is some databases that support change feeds. There's MongoDB all block tailing, and then there's RethinkDB with the change feeds. So we've been talking about building this in because it's actually basically you have your table and then you listen to changes on it and then you emit the same kind of events that Feather does already, right? So we're definitely looking into that. That's on the roadmap. I don't know if I want to touch that for SQL because triggers are not my thing. So if somebody else wants to take that on, but we're definitely planning on doing that for RethinkDB and MongoDB so that even if you stick things directly into the database, you'd get like those real-time updates. But we also noticed that it's actually not as important as you might think initially, because as long as everything and everybody is using the API, right, you'll still get all those events anyway. So we focus, like the Feather service pattern focuses specifically on that kind of level of abstraction instead of trying to hook into the database. Does it answer your question? I hope that.
Yeah. One thing that I'm curious on now with your description of that is, I don't know if you guys heard about the new project coming out of Meteor Development Group called Apollo, which is like adding reactivity to GraphQL pretty much. I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
It's been kind of funny seeing a lot of this stuff kind of come out because we've been prototyping some of that already for a while. I guess we won't talk about it too much because that was kind of going to be a little bit of a big bang, hopefully. I don't know. In some regards, maybe we could consider it a little bit of an arms race. Like, we're also trying to do something similar to that because it makes a lot of sense. Like, the people at Meteor are not dumb. They're very smart people. Like, they understand and they've really pioneered a lot of the stuff that's happening that we're even doing, right? I wouldn't say, you know, we modeled a lot of stuff off of what they did, but I remember when Meteor first came out, that was around the time that we were kind of tinkering with the idea of Feathers, and they came out with this massive explosion of pretty awesome stuff. Like, we didn't have all the real-time stuff that they did at the time. It was very much just service-oriented, and I think what they've done is really push stuff forward. And the next step that we see is, yeah, making it easier. I mean, really what GraphQL is trying to solve is making it easier to query the data that you need, especially across relationships, right? That's really challenging. Really challenging for Facebook too, when I imagine they've got this massive MySQL sharded cluster of normalized tables, like, you know, huge problem for them. So, you know, we're also kind of chasing the same thing, and reactive programming makes a lot of sense as well because, you know, even us just switching to promises or supporting a nice promise chain for hooks, debugging that's kind of crappy. You know, reactive programming makes it really, really easy to translate and transform your data. And you get one stream of data as opposed to right now with Feathers, you have to set up three different event listers essentially to get those real-time changes on your data. So yeah, that's all stuff that we're kind of looking at doing, and maybe Dave wants to chat a bit more.
I think we've had most of it. There's a proposal in the issues. We try to keep our issue list pretty small and tackle them quickly. So the ones that are still open are actual things that are discussions and features. There's one for making the APIs reactive, which is what Eric says. You basically do a find and then you subscribe to it, and you always get, when something happened, a create or a remove or something, your list is going to be re-emitted. So that works really nice with a lot of things. A friend here from Vancouver wrote Yoke, which is a reactive library like React, but with actual RxJS streams. So there's some things that can be done really, really nicely for that. And once that, I've been playing with that yesterday a little more. So it's pretty fun. It works really well too. And based on that, it's actually not that much of a step from there to going to a GraphQL graph and looking, oh, somebody created a new user, looking at the query and then inserting the user in the graph where it belongs, right? Because of how this is all set up, I think we can do something that might not be as powerful, but at least lets you have a real, like a reactive GraphQL query. So whenever something happens in Feathers, it'll update the graph for you. That needs direct program support, but it also needs just class GraphQL support. We've been talking about that a little bit, actually, because it's schema definitions across different databases are kind of hard. And one thing I think GraphQL does well is defining schemas and associations. So there's a lot of nice synergy. Did I use that word right? Marketing word. there's a lot of good things that we can do combining those and building on top of that. So it wasn't just because we wanted to do the same thing. We've been like playing with that idea even before Meteor announced the Apollo project. But I think it's going to be kind of similar, except for that it sits on top of Feather's API. So it's going to be interesting.
I'm excited to see more about it. Very cool. Do you guys have like an ETA of when the excited new stuff's going to be coming out? Because like you said, it's an arms race.
Yeah, I don't know.
With that funding, we could do it, but unfortunately, that's not where we're at. I don't know. The reactive API stuff, I'm hoping, hopefully we can get the prototype out pretty quick, like within the next 2 weeks. Because we've been playing with it for a while, and there's just a couple of tricky things to figure out that probably should be polished before you let people try it, even though it's still an alpha version. So that's going to be pretty quick. The GraphQL stuff, I need some more discussion, because there's people with other ideas saying, you know, what about JSON API or Swagger, which solves a similar problem when it comes to the definition of a schema, right? So, and we don't want to be just like dictate on this is how this is going to be done, right?
Exactly.
So, we'll stay flexible, but I think GraphQL would be something worth exploring.
Wow. Very cool. So it sounds like some pretty big changes, and you guys, one of the big pulls is the flexibility that you guys have, what you were just mentioning, doing GraphQL or reactive GraphQL and being like, okay, this is like the way to go. You might not want to do that. So that's interesting. There's a huge conversation to have around that.
We move really quick, but I think the reason we're able to move so quick is because we're leveraging a lot of other people's projects. Like the amount of code that we're writing, I got to even say in the last 3 months, I probably spent more time writing and updating documentation and answering questions than I did writing code. Like authentication was a pretty big piece that I did a lot of work on the last little while, but we really didn't touch core. And so I think it's kind of going to be the same thing. GraphQL and the reactive stuff will be kind of similar. Like we spend more time kind of thinking and kind of prototyping some of it than the amount of code that actually goes into it. But the big thing for us too is also making sure that everything is optional or as optional as it can be, right? So even the stuff that we talked about, op-log tailing, you know, you shouldn't have that baked in by default. Like most people don't need that. Some people don't even want that because that exposes your database to risk, right? If you've got it behind, if you got it exposed publicly, like you might not want to have op-log tailing. You might not want it for performance reasons as well. So I think having all that stuff optional, it'd be the same thing with GraphQL. Like you don't have to use, you know, GraphQL. You'd have other alternatives. If you wanted to roll them yourself, you could, or, you know, at least fall back to the way Feathers is right now.
You guys are using Passport.js and, you know, I mentioned before Express. And, you know, when I take a look at Meteor, on the other hand, like they're using Connect, you know, they've got Node wrapped in fibers, which is, you know, left us at this point where we're still on 0.10, whatever, 43 or whatever the latest version is, which is kind of, we're kind of lagging way behind now because there's all this code that they've written that they have to support. It wasn't necessarily standards based, or there weren't good options there necessarily, right? Like back when they started Meteor, Connect kind of was the standard, and now Express has kind of superseded it, which is interesting. But at the same time, now they have a huge base of kind of legacy clients almost, which is funny to say. And I guess in JavaScript land, like, oh, you're 2 years old, that's totally a legacy. Even now, people are clamoring for like, oh, Webpack support or hot module swapping or any of that kind of stuff. And it's not super easy to do in Meteor because they've written their own build tool and everything like that. So It's a good point. And it kind of brings up to me, like, what's it look like? Like, can you easily add Webpack and Apache to the mix and get hot module reloading and that kind of thing with Feathers?
Yeah, absolutely you can. Because we're completely front-end agnostic, I mean, we let people choose their build tools for that reason. It's funny, like, when I kind of going back a bit to what you were talking about with Fibers and Meteor being stuck on Node 10, I was super excited when I saw Meteor quite a few years ago. And I was like, Jesus, this is amazing. Like, these guys are just going to kill it. And it's crazy that they raised so much money. Like, I thought from a business perspective, that was a really interesting play, but it afforded them the ability to do some really awesome stuff. And I remember I started playing with it a little bit, and then I dug into a bit of the code and I saw they were doing stuff with Fibers. And there was a big debate about that on, like, the Node.js Google groups when it was back then. And that was actually a big turnoff for me, like that and the fact that they weren't using NPM. And so it took me quite a while to actually come back to Meteor, like about until the last 6 months maybe. And then I came back and built a couple quick apps on Meteor just to kind of see what they were doing and see if we were doing anything that was a little bit different or better. I'd be curious to talk with some of those guys off the record, like if they feel like that was a... Like, did they make that choice intentionally because of the funding, or did they make that choice just because they made the choice and thought it was the best architectural one at the time? It'd be really interesting to hear, you know, a bit of a story on, like, how, because it's easy to hypothesize, but I'd be curious to know, like, how the funding has actually affected their culture or some of their architectural decisions. From an outsider's perspective, when I look at that, I go, like, well, maybe they were forced to, you know, to try and have some more proprietary IP, right? Or something. And the way that we've really tried to approach it, because we don't have that, is like we have to leverage as much of other people's stuff as possible. There's no way we'd be able to maintain all that stuff ourselves. Like, it's not possible.
Yeah. I think that's a more recent change that's maybe happened at MDG. To me, having been in the community for 2 or 3 years, it feels more like almost a not invented here syndrome, you know, like we didn't build that, so we don't know if we can trust that, and therefore we'll go build our own thing. Because, I mean, if you look, React has been around almost as long. So for them to come back around and settle on it now is interesting. I mean, granted, it was pretty early on back when they... Well, you know, that's not fair either, because, I mean, Blaze, when they redid everything, Blaze was almost a year and a half, 2 years ago now. So, I mean, React was certainly further along, and they could have made that choice to leverage someone else's work or even Vue.js, right? Like, they hired the Vue.js guy. Like, why is that not a big thing in Meteor land? So,
I think it affects decision-making, too. Like, what you were mentioning, Eric, like, they did raise a huge amount of money. So now you got resources available to yourself, and like that affects how you make decisions. Then Feathers is like, you guys are scrappy. You guys just like put, like, you're like, okay, what do we have available to us? What's to the community? Okay, how can we leverage that and like put it together quickly? So it's a different decision process to go through it. And like hearing you talk about that and how you're leveraging other work and all that, I'm curious to hear what you guys are thinking about, like, the recent drama that went down with Express, and if you guys were concerned in any way that that was going to, like, settle down and affect Feathers in a negative way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, to be pointed, definitely. I mean, we've stayed, I'd say Dave and I, like, we've stayed pretty... With Feathers, you know, we did a push and now we've gotten a little bit more attention, which is nice and also tough at the same time, because we're finding that we're having to spend more time answering questions and
doing podcasts.
No, but, well, I mean, this nice to have discussions with you guys, especially after watching the other one. We got to see kind of how you approach stuff. And this is a great way for us to kind of answer a lot of the questions that people have been hitting us with in Slack as well. So hopefully we'll be able to kind of push this out and people will be able to go, oh, okay. But yeah, I think the stuff with Express is really, like, open source is just such an interesting space in general. From a business perspective, it gets really messy or can be really messy. And with Express, I mean, we are relying on it, but actually one of the things that we have slated for V3 is to become agnostic. So even the engine underneath, we're looking at becoming agnostic so that you could use Express if you want, especially if you're already on an existing Express system or Express app. You can start, you know, incrementally rolling over to a Feathers app without having to completely rewrite. And that's stuff that we have done with clients before. The other one is Koa comes up, you know, with generator support. So being able to use Koa underneath or even individual modules, because really all that Express is doing for us is content negotiation and routing mainly, right? You know, there's some niceties in there, but that's primarily what it's doing underneath, because Express actually is just a grouping of small modules now too. That's kind of where we'd like to get to.
That's super interesting.
So one thing is that wasn't actually just a knee-jerk reaction to the Express drama. We were talking about that before. And after we had this PR land for making it work on the client, realized that, well, in reality, on the client, it basically has like an Express placeholder instead of Express. So you have some of the get and set API, but it's like 50 lines of code that just exposes some of the methods from Express. So we could do the same thing and use a different framework underneath. So that's where that proposal came from. So I think that flexibility is going to be helpful. I personally don't think that Express is going to like go away anytime soon. Even the exposure and what the community talks about is extremely different sometimes to what's actually used. So if you look at Koa as like, I think 100,000 downloads in NPM a month, and Express has 25 million. So there's still quite a difference in the number of people talking about it and the number of people actually using it, right? So I honestly don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. So we want to keep the options open, because the spirit is that it's flexible and modular, but not because we're afraid that what we build it on is going to fall apart.
Makes sense. Keeps you guys flexible for whatever comes next after that even. So that's cool. That is like major architectural decisions that will help you stay light going forward, whereas a lot of libraries end up getting like pretty heavy and bogged down going forward. So that's pretty neat to hear that. I'm curious. I want to circle back, because throughout the whole conversation up to this point, it kind of was sprinkled in like the things that make you guys unique, which is the resources that are available to you, how you guys approach other open source libraries. And you guys are talking about how 2.0 at the very beginning, it was focused more like, yeah, for like a push on branding, a big documentation push and all that stuff. I want to hear from you. What do you guys see as your unique selling proposition? Like, as if I was going to be a marketer out there, because you did say early on, you compared what you guys were doing to make sure that it was even relevant compared to what else was going on. So
I think you're asking what are their synergies? Just kidding.
Man, Josh, hey,
that's the second time in a developer blog podcast.
This is excellent.
So, I mean, we put together on the, I'm just looking at it right now. So on the docs, inside of Y Feathers, we put a little thing that has a feature comparison table, but also we tried to put a fairly, you know, as best as we could, an objective comparison between some of the common frameworks or more common frameworks out there, and kind of how Feathers is different. There's a lot of overlap. I mean, you know, we won't kind of beat around it. There's quite a bit of overlap between we know what Feathers provides and what Firebase provides and what Parse does and Meteor and Sails and Derby. I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is like, well, one, how modular we are. That's a real big one. The bigger one for me is that, like I said, we like to, you know, and the definition could be debated, but we like to say that we're service oriented, right? And like I said, the original goal was to be able to move from a monolithic app to services or microservices fairly easily. And that's really more of an architectural concern, but I think, or that's how we kind of get around it, is just how your code is structured, but also the composition of hooks and services. Like, that was what Dave did his thesis on, and that's a super powerful architectural pattern that keeps things super flexible but also really consistent. And I think that's probably the biggest difference, you know, from a feature or from a marketing or feature perspective. That's definitely what we tried to focus on. I guess another big one, like Meteor, is probably the only one other than us now that supports bidirectional socket communication. Like, you can do it with the other frameworks, but you have to implement some stuff with Feathers and Meteor. Like, Meteor, I think, calls it DDP, right? But you can send data over sockets as well as just as receive notifications. And that's the same thing you can do with Feathers. And then I guess lastly would be like the database support, like you mentioned before. Because we wrap some existing ORMs and because we've implemented some service adapters ourselves, you know, that's probably a pretty big differentiator there, especially for people coming from Meteor. So you're not necessarily locked into Mongo. I think for Feathers 2, though, that's probably the big differentiator. Some of the stuff that we have coming for Feathers 3, I think that'll be really where we start to set ourselves a bit more apart from other people.
You forgot it's React Native.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
You put all the time you spent debugging.
Yeah, and you know, I guess I spent a lot of my time doing React Native stuff. So Feathers plays really well with React and React Native. The service pattern mates really well with Angular 1 as well. Angular 2 is kind of still alpha, beta-ish. But Angular 1, it actually works really, really well. With React Native, like, you know, there's some hacks. There's even one that kind of got broken recently with the version of beta 2, or with React Native version 22. But we spent quite a bit of time trying to see how you could get sockets, like Socket.io and Primus, working in React Native. And Socket.io has a little bit of a bug where they require the navigator to be there, and makes it hard to debug on React Native because they put their console in a web worker, which doesn't have the navigator. So anyway, there's an open issue on Socket.io for that. But I think that's another big one, is that we support React Native really well out of the box, and it's super easy to do to build mobile apps now, which is nice.
I still think that's kind of the dark horse feature of Meteor, was when they added the Cordova support. And, you know, now you look at it and you're like, Cordova support? Like, React Native would have been 10 times better, but maybe that's harder to predict that far out when they were doing Cordova. But it's one of those things, you know, even a Meteor was like, we could maybe do that. And they did it in like a little point release, like, oh, now you can add platforms. So kind of funny, but I'm excited about maybe trying out the React Native stuff. So
it's pretty sweet. I mean, like, we're obviously biased, but man, like, you know, regardless of whether you love Feathers or not, like, right now in React Native land, it's the easiest way to get authentication going with a backend. Like, hands down, it's the easiest way. I think I saw something that somebody had done Meteor DDP for React Native as well. So there might be the ability to do it with Meteor too. That's something we're putting a pretty big emphasis on, because for a couple of us, that's where we spend more of our fun time and where we're focusing some of our consulting effort is around React.
Talking about consulting, that goes to my next question, which is maintainability. And, you know, people are going to be depending on Feathers JS. If you guys really push it, which you guys are doing a great job doing, build a community around it, all of a sudden, like, there are going to be larger apps being built around it. There are going to be consulting firms like adopting this and really wanting to drive it forward. How are you guys structuring yourself so that you guys will be able to maintain this going forward into the future, like financially and with time and everything?
Yeah, that's totally a fair question. I mean, that was also what, at least definitely for me, weighed in the decision in kind of November, December, on whether we were actually going to push this forward or whether we were going to just keep it as a kind of a side thing. So, I mean, we're very invested in it. It's something we've talked about a ton in terms of, you know, at some point, how do you make money on open source, or how do you make money supporting an open source thing? And so whether that's just consulting ourselves, which is kind of what we've been doing currently. But I think ultimately for us, a lot of the guys on the core team are product people. And so we're looking at, I think, taking a bit more of a 37 signals-ish model where we have built a product or a series of products that are built on top of this technology. And then I think, you know, whenever you have a business involved in an open source project, it's, and this is a bit of a longer discussion, but it, there's risk that it pollutes the project, right?
Yes.
We're also trying to be really sensitive to that. And that, sure, like if we built a product on top of Feathers and we need something in Feathers in order to push that product forward, I think it's fair to say that that probably should make its way in. That being said, though, we're also trying to be very sensitive to other people's concerns and other people's stuff if they're depending on Feathers as well. So, I mean, I guess to cut it short, like, you know, we're very invested in Feathers. We made the decision to actually follow through with it. And I had a post on Medium, maybe a couple months back on that. I feel like open source has really changed in that people now have been trying to use it as a way to get notoriety or as a way to their career or progress, you know, whatever. And I think if you make that conscious decision to try and push something out, then you now, and I could be argued, but now you kind of owe it to the community to give them at least a very long heads up, like a fair warning that, hey, I can't support this, or, you know, I need contributors, or I'm willing to support it until X. Like, you need to treat it like a product. And I think that's really, you know, coming down with the marketing push, with all the stuff that we've done, we really tried to look at our open source project with Feathers like a product.
That makes sense, because going to your site, you see it, like there's a link for training that opens up straight to an email. So it would assume like consulting. And then there's like, there's a hire us link. So that's part of your guys' push to like, to drive it as a product, right? Or at least for a way to acquire customers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of funny. We put those links in there thinking that nobody would click on them. And you know, a couple of us come from startup space, so we're used to tracking metrics and like monitoring that stuff. So we were monitoring. I was looking at it and going, like, there's actually quite a few people that clicked on that stuff. We should probably do a bit more in that area. You know, we weren't really thinking that anybody would click it, so we didn't invest putting any time into like a branding page or even linking back to the consulting site. We thought, well, we'll just put something in there and see if anybody hits on it. And it seems like some people are interested. So, yeah, I mean, like, if you're looking for consulting work, you can contact us, and we'd be more than willing to see if there's something that works out. Yeah, I don't think people should be right. They shouldn't be afraid of adopting Feathers for fear that it's going to go away, because we're putting a lot of our livelihood into it. And there's always risk when you accept or transition to a new technology. But I think the fact that we are a thin wrapper over top of Express, and Express has been around for a long time, a lot of the existing libraries that we're using, like Passport, they've been around for quite a while, are very popular and have been maintained for quite a while. But Feathers itself, really, I hate to say it, isn't doing that much other than giving you a nice architectural pattern to follow. So it's a pretty safe bet, I think.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, so contingency plan-wise too, because there are so many small modules, right? It's really easy for people to take ownership. And we had people transfer modules to the main organization already, which was awesome to see. And when a module is just 200 lines of code, it's much easier to, you know, give ownership or share ownership with people versus you have this giant thing that somebody has to make sense of. So we're hoping that that is going to help to make it easier to contribute. And from what we've found so far, and longevity-wise too, right? Because it's easy, if you make it easier to contribute, obviously there's more of a contingency plan from the contributors. And we've already found that there were some great contributions just because we had to make it quick and easy for ourselves to get out new releases and get up and running quickly. So I'm hoping that that part of the strategy also works out.
That's awesome. People coming from Meteor totally understand that, making it easy to contribute. Well, guys, it's been super great talking with you guys. Everyone who's listening, check out Eric and Dave on Twitter. Go to GitHub. Check out Feathers.js. Also, go to feathersjs.com. Like, the documentation, I am so impressed with the documentation. And when Eric was mentioning that they did a big push on documentation, like, no joke. It is super easy to get going with Feathers. And it's almost like tutorial level a grade where it's going to be walking you through everything. And I think that's really neat and required from Feathers, because they do tie in with a bunch of other technologies and libraries and open source. Thank you guys very much. Wrapping it up, and we can't forget it, we got to do picks for the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll start off, because I was like...
I stole your thunder last time, so...
Well, I didn't even know what to pick. I totally forgot last time.
I stole your House of Cards last time.
Oh, my gosh. Talking about House of Cards, everyone's been binge-watching it, and I was still, like, in season one.
Oh.
Forever. And I finally got to season two, episode one. That's huge. That's huge. That was a subway situation, guys.
Yeah.
I need to remind you. Oh, my gosh.
That was a crazy scene, dude.
Oh, I can't wait to watch episode two of that.
Do it.
Anyway. But my pick of the week is this cool thing from Garmin. The Garmin Vivo. What's this called? The Vivo Smart HR with the heart rate monitor on it. So totally cool. I like it. I've been wanting to get like a heart rate monitor for a while. Fitbit HR, I heard, kind of stunk with the heart rate. Yeah. Apple Watch, just, I've known people that returned Apple Watch just because they just aren't, it's not what they expected. And so I didn't want to make the investment.
Yeah.
And wait for the next version. But I have been super impressed with this thing. Super impressed for the price, $150. Heart rate's awesome. And it has a broadcast mode. So I can like hack it, get my heart rate and like do cool stuff with it with Bluetooth and mobile apps I built. Anyway, that's my pick. I love it. Go out, buy it. I get a dollar for every one that's bought in the next month. I'm joking. That'd be cool though.
Put Ben's affiliate link on the show notes.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I'll jump in because I'm following suit a little bit along that line, the fitness stuff. Like, I've been finding it very hard to stay motivated all the time. So I got my bike. You probably can't see it. I'll see if I can show you. So I have my bike set up on a trainer here in my office. I basically just don't leave my office anymore. My family misses me a lot. But I saw the Fitbit Blaze and I was like, man, that one actually looks pretty sweet. The new one that just came out. But another pick for me is I think I'm going to end up getting the Wahoo Fitness trainer for my bike, which basically allows me to take the wheel off and it's got power resistance and stuff like that. I got a bunch of the other Wahoo sensors and they're aces. So definitely recommend their product.
Dave, what about you?
Yeah. So this is probably something totally different. I like dark music, and I grew up in Europe, and Europe is known for gigantic alternative festivals. Luckily, I found the Canadian version of it, which is sometimes even better because you get to see the bands that I've seen with 15,000 other people in that little bar, my favorite bar, with 500 people, and hang out with them over the weekend. They're doing announcements for this week, for this year, sorry. It's at terminusfestival.com. And it's awesome. Every year it's like keep discovering new music. There's a lot of small artists and big artists coming in and just having a good time. It's more of a, they call it industrial summer camp. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be a good time. And if you are American, you can pretty much get there for free because the exchange rate is pretty fantastic right now.
Oh my gosh, seriously. Yeah.
That's funny.
All right, so we're all done with picks. Let's go on.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Gosh.
I love you, man.
Yeah, sure you do. My pick is going to be the new audio and video equipment that I got all set up. So after we had we did the Creator podcast and had the crackling robotic mic problem, and then we did a Space Dojo show on Elm, and I had to use the iMac mic, which was subpar. I went out and got a Telefunken mic and pop filter, and I've got a new C920 webcam, which is a little whiter, and now you can really see that teal behind me. So if you're going to do something, spend a lot of time doing something, you should probably invest in good tools to do it with. So that's what I did this week.
100% agree. Actually, I should have even thought about it because I'm wearing them. I've got, this was absurd. Like, these cost me so much money, but they're Sennheiser Momentum wireless headphones. And I'm in the same boat. Like, I use my headphones all day, pretty much all the time. Like, if you're going to be using stuff every day, you should invest in good stuff. It makes you feel good. It makes you more productive. So,
yeah, indeed. All right, guys. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. If people want to find you, where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm at eKryski. That's pretty much everywhere. eKrysky.
Cool.
Same everywhere for me, DAFFL.
Nice. Awesome. I want to say a big thanks to the show sponsor, DigitalOcean, as well. So if you're looking for hosting, check out digitalocean.com. And if you enjoy these shows, I still haven't changed it, but you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/Meteor Club, and $10 a month will get you into the Space Dojo Slack channel, which is the best Slack channel ever. Ever. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone, and we will be back next time. And thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yep.
Ciao.
Yeah.
This has been a Space Dojo production. You can find out more information about Space Dojo at spacedojo.com. It's easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. That's SpaceDojo.com.